From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin introducing show number 47 with guest Noel Bruton, recorded Wednesday, February 27th, 2008. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hey, you're listening to RunAsRadio.com, and I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, Greg Hughes.
Hey, how you doing, everybody? Richard, what's going on?
All is well, man. It's been a crazy little travel burst for me, but I'm back home for a little while, so we get a chance to record a few more shows. And I have an email.
Let's hear it.
This is from David Rubin, and the subject is Best Show Ever. Greg and Richard, I just finished listening to show number 44 with Scott Gavitin on OpenID, and I just had to let you know how much I enjoyed it. I think this is the best show you've done yet. Scott was passionate about the subject and quite articulate, and I appreciated the fact that he was promoting a broadly applicable technology solution instead of simply shilling for a particular product offering from Microsoft, as some of your other guests have done. I hope you'll have okay. more shows like 44 in the future with eloquent, enthusiastic guests from both Microsoft Universe and others. Thanks for the great content, David Rubin. David, thank you.
Thanks, David.
I really had a great time talking to Scott. He was amazing. Yes.
Well, Scott's a great guy, and he's here in Portland area where I'm at, and so I've had the opportunity to meet him, and he's very enthusiastic. He's really into the technology, and he really is a great spokesperson for OpenID.
And as much as I appreciate the kudos, I appreciated the criticism even more because, of course, we're still in our first 50 here. We're still feeling around for where this show's going to go. We've always had a focus on Microsoft technologies, but maybe we need to broaden our horizons more, talk to more general technologies like OpenID and things like that.
I think that in a way, I think you're right. You know, at the same time, Microsoft technology is certainly ubiquitous, you know, across many IT enterprises. And so we have touched on some non-Microsoft topics. We're probably a little heavier on the Microsoft side of things. I do also, you know, believe that that's probably indicative of what a lot of IT shops look like.
And I felt that podcasting in general around IT topics underplayed the significance Microsoft had in the market.
True.
That there was more to talk
about.
We
are interested in looking at non-Microsoft technologies, and we certainly have done some shows that focus on that. I think that really what we'd really be interested in hearing is what specific topics our audience would like to hear about, and also even potentially who it is they'd like to hear it from.
Right. I mean, I do my best to avoid getting any, quote, shills on the show, but often when we're talking about a deep technology, the best people to go to are the guys who wrote it.
And that are the means, people that know it the best, right?
Yeah, they know it the deepest. Even if they, yep. you know, their story may be a little more challenging, they really do understand their product.
Well, and ultimately, I think it's what we're really trying to do is to find people who can talk about things that can solve problems, save money, and improve, you know, the quality of service that IT people are providing every day.
And if you've got questions, insights, complaints, criticisms, you're looking for a particular show or you're looking for a particular personality for us to interview, send us an email, info@runasradio.com. All right, Greg, let's introduce our guest. Noel Bruton is a UK-based independent consultant who, since 1991, has advised corporations on improving IT help desk and user support services and performance, in which he has a global clientele across a range of industry sectors. A regular figure on the conference stage, his syndicated press articles are read by thousands of IT service professionals around the globe. He is the author of the best-selling How to Manage the IT Help Desk and Managing the IT Services Process, and is held by press and industry observers as one of the world's leading authorities in his field. Welcome, Noel.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Noel. I actually have a copy of the second edition of How to Manage the IT Help Desk sitting right here on my desk.
Wow.
Thank you for that. I really enjoyed that book.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
Was Greg who said, you know who we have to get on the show? Is Noel Bruton, and sent me on a mission to recruit you, essentially, because I'm not a guy who's ever run a help desk per se, but I know that Greg has certainly been in the center of all this and values your opinions very highly.
I think, Noah, you know, it's very interesting to read. I mean, I remember the first time, I don't even know what it was, if it was a presentation of yours or a publication of the book. I don't remember which was first, but I really think that it'll be interesting to have our listeners listen to some of your philosophy on the service desk and the help desk. I want you to talk about it, not be, but I think that you're one of the guys that really gets it and also has a great talent for putting it on paper and explaining it.
Thanks very much. Well, it's a good place to start, the difference between the help desk and the service desk.
Absolutely.
The help desk, it's been help desk for as long as anybody can remember, really, but that term tends to have fallen out of favor recently and has been replaced by and large by the service desk. But you can't really say they're the same thing. But let's just deal with the functionality of help desk, because even though the name may have changed and some of the roles may have changed, the functionality of the help desk still exists and is as it has always been, which is it has the purpose of being able to take inquiries from computer users and to be able to resolve those inquiries. Now, how it goes about that, it's pretty complex. It's not like a call center. It doesn't just take calls and then provide a piece of information that already exists. It goes through a diagnostic process, and that's an important stage. In the service desk, the diagnostic side of things is not as crucial, because what the service desk does, as opposed to the help desk, is a service desk can take any kind of inquiry, whether it be to resolve a technical problem or whether it be anything that a user may need to continue to work. So, for example, a service desk may take a request to provide a new piece of equipment. And that's really more a procurement function than it is a diagnostic problem-solving function.
One of the points that I know I've heard you make before is that there's a difference between a user and a customer.
Maybe you could
explain that.
Well, to me, I prefer to use the terminology that helps, me define what it is I'm talking about. A customer, we always used to call them users back in the mainframe days when in the earlier help desk, they were always called users to define the difference between people who used the computer and people who programmed it or administrated it. Then perhaps in the early 1990s to mid-1990s, people started to say, well, we should professionalize IT support more because, let's face it, we're just a bunch of hush puppy wearing Unix experts and our users don't understand that. And really what we should do is become more customer focused and turn ourselves into an organization that recognizes that we have customers to serve. And so we started to call our users customers. Unfortunately, we tended to use the term universally, and we forgot what types of customers there can be. See, to my mind, a customer is anybody who consumes anything they perceive us to have produced. And that's whether or not we intended to produce it, and whether or not we did it deliberately. So, for example, they might consume our image, our tendency to operate the way the corporation wants us to operate. They might consume our way of doing things. They might consume our their view of our loyalty to the corporation. There's so many different things besides just solving technical problems. So anything that we can consume, let's say, for example, a management report going out of the help desk or the service desk, that's a product that somebody can consume.
Sure.
Does that mean that the person who consumes it is a customer? Possibly. Does that mean they're necessarily a computer user? Maybe not. The finance director might use one of our statistical reports, but he doesn't necessarily use our technical problem-solving services. He has people to do that for him. So that might make him a customer, but it doesn't make him a user. So I tend to use the terms to define precisely what it is we're talking about. A user is one type of customer that the help desk may have, only one, and there are others.
All right, that makes a lot of sense to me, and you're right. We're going to take calls from every skill level of potential operator of the machine. I know all three of us have been through this battle when we call our ISP or our telco or anything like that, where we really don't want to talk to a tier one tech support person. Because by the time we're calling for help, we've done a lot of diagnostic work already, and we just want to get on to, here's what I figure the problem is. Can you validate with me? Can you get it going again?
Okay. Now, that's true. And it would be great if computers were still so limited that we could put every type of technical problem immediately to the person who could handle it.
Yeah, but that's a whole other problem, isn't it?
It is indeed. I mean, for example, I've just finished work with redesigning a support desk that has to look after a classic Windows Wintel environment, but it also has to look after a scientific environment where the machines that are in use are Unix devices, both desktop and servers. The people who use the Unix devices tend to be much more expert in the actual programming even of the computers, or at the site that I was working at anyway. They were much more expert, and they needed a different type of support. They needed more of a strategic guidance as to how they might be able to get more out of the technology in the future. What the people on the Windows environment tended to want, because they were more of an administrative style user, was my productivity has been impeded by a failure of this computer or in my ability to use it.
Yeah, or perceived failure anyway.
Indeed. Could you please restore my productivity by whatever means? And typically that's let's fix the computer. And that requires a different type of support. And you can often do much more of that on a classical first line than you could do, say, in a Unix environment where what you needed to do was to talk to a technical expert straight away.
Is what's really happened to us that our skill level of our users has gone down?
No. If anything, I would think users are probably more sophisticated than they used to be. But what's happened is that the computer has become a much more vertical device. Where once upon a time, the desktop computer was pretty limited in what it could do. It was just an office machine, really. It was a replacement for a typewriter. Nowadays, they can be immensely, complex in terms of providing, solutions for specific business needs in vertical environments. Once upon a time, you might have had to have something that was purpose built for that.
Right.
So what's tending to happen now is that we're diverging the types of support that can be provided. You've got vertical support as well as horizontal support. And you'll, so like, for example, as a technician in a standard Microsoft Windows-based user support team, I can answer just about everything you ask me about networking and connecting to remote printers and Microsoft Office. That's all very well. But also there are people using a highly specialized, let's say, finance system, also using a Wintel environment. But in order to be able to solve problems to those users, I'd need to understand the vertical nature of the way they're using the computers, and it's not horizontal. So I'd have to be part finance person to be able to understand their use of the computer.
Right. These are sort of domain-specific applications that need domain-specific support.
Indeed. Application support. I mean, to my mind, it's a missed opportunity for help desks. I'm sure they could increase their value to their corporations greatly by by providing more business application support than just the horizontal office-based stuff, because in a lot of cases these days you get an expert, say for example, we have, say, a pool of executive assistants, quite common these days when you've got an executive corridor or an executive suite. Those people will be expert in the use of spreadsheets, in the use of word processing systems, to the extent that an IT technician never could be, because they never get to use those applications in that way.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that means that the type of support that we're having to offer is different to what the actors are, to what the users may need to consume. So we end up being limited to being able to help them if they can't log onto the network, or if they can't see a remote printer, or if they can't see the remote files, that kind of thing. But as soon as it comes into how do I actually get more out of this application, as IT help desks these days, we're out of our depth. That's my view anyway.
And it sounds like you said, called this a missed opportunity already, but I feel like I could put a dollar value to that. You know, in the end, the whole reason we have a help desk is to maintain the productivity of the rest of the company.
Yeah.
And that's got a direct cost-benefit associated to it. So I've got to think that it would be well worth computing a cost-benefit around something as specific as a financials application. The downtime on that's got to be hugely consequential.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's a couple of ways of looking at this. One, of course, is what is the financial risk if this application is not available? But you can take it across the board for user support inquiries. Every time a user support inquiry comes in, you can assume that a user's productivity has been at least temporarily impeded to a certain degree.
Right. For no other reason than they're on the phone rather than working.
Indeed. And while they're not working, they're not doing what they were hired to do.
Right.
And you can see that in the bottom line. In the productivity of the corporation is the aggregate effort producing ultimately the turnover. Although you guys don't call it turnover, you call it is it revenue? You call it over there. We call it turnover in the UK. The total amount of money the corporation takes in.
Right, revenue.
Yeah. And if you can actually divide that down into hourly effort, and then you put another factor on it because not everybody uses the computer all the time or depends on it 100%. But it can be calculated out.
Noel, you're touching on something that is making me think of the term marketing here. We've bounced off of the idea of image a few times. From a management perspective,
excuse me, guys, can I just interject? I just heard a bleep and a drop in there. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
We'll ask the question again. I didn't hear it.
There it is again.
Yeah. And I think that's just an incoming call on one of the lines.
Oh, okay.
And it's easy enough to fix. But, Greg, pick up your question again, and we'll just carry on.
No, you've touched on a number of points that have made me start to think about the concept of messaging or marketing or maybe even selling the IT function to the business. That's something that I think a lot of IT management professionals have a hard time doing. Maybe it's not even their area of expertise. Maybe you could touch on that a little bit.
Indeed. There's other uses for it as well. If you've got the first place to start is to have a clear identity of what your support desk is. And it's not just enough to allow people to answer the phone support because it doesn't mean anything. What exactly are you there to do? Until you know that, your customers can't know what to expect from you. And if they don't know what to expect from you, there's no way to measure whether you're successful or not. So what the first thing to do is to find out what services are you actually there to provide. Are you a service desk that needs to be able to order photocopy of paper? Do you take calls because somebody seems to have lost the key to the corporate car park? Or do you only deal with the Wintel environment, or do you only deal with the business applications environment? Find out what that is first, because you need that understanding as well as everybody else. Once you've got that understanding, then that can be... I suppose marketed is one way of doing it. You certainly need to publicize the desk at least to set customer expectations.
Plain communication seems to be a lot of value in that. I know my experience has been that just communicating regularly and opening up that dialogue has always shown a lot of positive benefit for me.
True, but it's difficult for technical people to do it, as you pointed out, Greg.
That's true, yes.
There's a corporation that I'm currently engaged with, and they have in their IT services management team somebody who is effectively nothing more than a salesman, really. They call him the relationships manager, and it's his job to go and visit the various, customer groups or customer functions, user functions, and describe to them and keep making sure that they understand what services we actually provide out of IT services. And also then to measure our output and to manage the service level agreement side of things, to make sure that that we're providing the amount of output and the speed of productivity and the speed of resolution that they really need from a business point of view.
Is this one of those situations where, you know, the technical person is often promoted into an IT management position and then realizes about 35 minutes later that they've made a big mistake by saying yes? That they don't have the background, and the learning curve is quite often very steep.
Oh, guys, I thought this was only a 30-minute show.
We just stepped in it right there.
It's unfortunate because people who are really good at solving technical problems and are well organized and are productive and are popular with the customers are, let's face it, pretty rare in terms of the overall type of people that are in the IT pool, if you like.
I would agree with that statement.
Well, but yes. We come into the IT space with technical expertise. It's
We're
a surprise.
That's what the job advert.
Yeah, that was what the job was about. You wanted me to be good at Exchange. You didn't tell me I needed to talk to people too.
But what the job advert didn't say was you need to have a real attitude about you before you start working here, right? I mean, the attitude kind of comes into play sometimes too. If we're talking about, you know, highly technical people that maybe are not great people, that's
yeah.
There's a confusing term.
Oh, we're kind of there's pressure on us, though, isn't there? Let's say one of our best technicians announces his intention to depart. One of the things we have to do, ideally, we'd have a clone of him ready to move straight in, because what we don't want to do is to have a loss of our own ability to support the users while we're trying to train up somebody new. So we put an advert in the paper that almost exactly describes his skill set so that we can hire his clone the day after he leaves. Do you see what I mean? And that's always been the temptation, because we can't afford the loss of service. But that then means that the most senior people in the IT help desk tend to be the longest serving technicians. And often they don't want to let go of the technical side.
And sometimes that's a good thing.
Well, it is. But the thing is, we can't. We've always had a difficulty in IT in recognizing skill sets that are not classically IT. That's why help desk salaries have remained static in the UK. They've actually gone down over the last 10 years, while the technical skills are still being highly rewarded.
The thing is,
unless we have a way of in IT support, it's different. It's not like programming. It's not like network support. In user support, we're dealing with people, because we're trying to bring them back to productivity. It's not necessarily just a technical problem. It might be a problem with their ability to use the computer. So we've always got to deal with people. So there have to be people skills there, and they have to be recognized. And if we could recognize them, then perhaps we could start to promote into management positions the people who were coming through the people side of IT rather than the technical side. But we still have this myopia about technicality is all there is in IT, I believe.
Yeah, it's that limited image of what's important. So it's very much like, I think, looking at your users and assuming that your users are your only customers, when really you have a variety of different people who are your customers, right?
Well, we're being measured one way or another all over the corporation, because let's face it, ultimately, doesn't everything exist for a financial reason? And are we delivering value for money? So we're being looked at least by financial people as well as the traditional users.
Well, and I think that's a valid point I make quite often to groups, saying just because you're not doing the math about how much your stuff costs and how much benefit you have doesn't mean someone else isn't. And if you aren't keeping an eye on it, their conclusions may be very different from yours.
Do you know what? It's partly the problem with the way we measure ourselves. You look at the classic help desk software that you can buy these days, and what they'll tell you is how many calls you took and how quickly you resolved them. In other words, just straightforward quantities and performance.
Right.
But they don't tell you whether it made business sense to even take those types of calls.
Right.
Or how much value was delivered into the business by you answering that particular section of calls, or even whether the customers enjoyed you doing it to them.
Right, customer satisfaction, sure.
So we don't have a way of feeding back to the corporation the business value of the services that we provide. We just do them instinctively because people ask us technical questions and we resolve them. But where's the... let's say, for example, if I want to go to the finance director and say, finance director, I need a new technician to work for my help desk. And he asks the question, why? And I can answer it by saying, well, I need him because I've got all these questions coming in and I need somebody to be able to resolve them.
Right.
But that leaves him with an issue, a financial issue. Do I spend more money on the help desk or not? Well, the answer to that is usually pretty easy, isn't it? It's not.
But unless you can show that you're saving money by spending money, he has no reason to spend the money.
Exactly. If I don't take this investment in the help desk, do I incur a cost elsewhere, and what's the difference between the two? And that's what I think IT departments have not often been able to provide. What's the difference between the cost of this investment and the cost of not making that investment? We tend to measure ourselves technically, and even the software we buy for ourselves, it still measures us just technically instead of in terms of our business return.
And this gets back to your original point that most support desks purely support the Windows environment, the networking environment, and Office, because they don't know how much more value they provide in other areas, or even whether it's worthwhile to support in those areas.
Yep, indeed.
The most cost-effective and productivity-effective method to support Office is to leave people to figure it out for themselves with the Office help system. I'm shuddering.
There's a whole other topic right there, I think.
I'm not so sure I agree with you there, Richard.
But if you haven't asked that question and proven one way or the other, you really aren't doing your due diligence here.
True enough.
The point being, there's more resources for support on Office than there are on your custom financial app.
Yeah. There's a simple way of measuring that. For example, an incident occurs involving Microsoft Office. How long would it, or let's say Exchange, something we know we really can support, how long would it take for the user to be able to fix it by reading all the manuals compared to how long it would take us to fix it? While the user's fixing it, he's not doing what he was hired to do. While we're fixing it, we are doing what we were hired to do. So the user's losing productivity if he fixes it himself. This is one of the reasons I'm not that keen on even self-help for users. As far as I'm concerned, it's much more business. It's much more valid for the business to have somebody to call who can fix it quickly.
So what happens? What happens when the image of the help desk and the IT department in general, and sometimes those are connected to each other and other times not, but yep. What are the consequences of that image going sour? I mean, there really is, I think, an image to manage here, isn't there?
There is indeed, especially in if you're a traditionally structured IT department that puts the first line people in the help desk. That's one organization, and it's the one that the users see. Yet all the technical experts who actually produce the answers are in other departments, and the help desk is then held responsible for the service levels that come out of those other departments. And it's not universally managed. It's a common problem. So where's there should be a control over the entire service level, and it should be end to end, because here's something I come across all the time. How good is the help desk? Well, they're really, really friendly on the phone, but they're not quick enough. But right. It's not the help desk that's producing the answers. It's the second line. It's the network technicians and the desktop technicians. So in other words, they see the help desk as being really, really friendly, but frankly useless. Because that's the marketing difference. Well, somebody should be governing the entire service level from end to end so that the entire thing is seen the way the help desk is seen, friendly and helpful.
Right. So jumping around a little bit here, how does the whole help desk, service desk model fit into ITIL?
Ooh, that's a really big topic. And I think there's been an awful lot of confusion about that. Let's start off with what ITIL is.
Right.
ITIL is not a way of running a help desk. ITIL, the Information Technology Infrastructure Library, is a set of manuals that offer a framework for the way you would run the whole of IT. And the whole of IT in an integrated fashion, all the way from we design a business application through to we deliver that business application, we cost justify the services to surround it, we invent the services that are needed to support it, and we provide a reactive service if anything goes wrong with it. In other words, the whole thing from end to end, even the bits the help desk is not involved with.
A lot of things that ITIL just doesn't even take into account that probably matter a lot to a help desk.
Yep. ITIL's the main processes tend to operate at a very high level. There are two key processes, well, probably three, that affect IT support, and that's incident management, problem management, change management. You could say release management as well comes into it. But for example, there's nothing specific in the main ITIL processes that tell you how to manage your customers or your users. There's nothing specific that tells you how to organize your technical knowledge. There's nothing specific that tells you what's the best way to structure the department so it can deliver services smoothly. In other words, you're left to do the actual nitty-gritty of day-to-day management yourself. Now, I can understand when the exponents of ITIL say, well, that's because ITIL is not prescriptive. It can't be prescriptive, because if it were, it would limit itself to the number of organizations and types of organizations it can help. But it is being prescriptive in that it says there is such a thing as change management, incident management, problem management. And what I'm suggesting it should do is perhaps if it's going to give that kind of guidance, then give it at a much lower and more practical level rather than just these high-flying, as it were, suggestions of the types of processes you need.
So is the risk really that people will look at ITIL as the end-all, be-all, even though it's not? Are there assumptions made in that way? And when people... organizations do that, they tend to have problems?
I did a survey a couple of years ago on the experiences of organizations who've adopted ITIL. And if you send me an email, I'll send you a PDF of the survey as well.
Okay.
So there's an advert for free. the survey suggested that 75% of adopting organizations realized that ITIL wasn't the only answer to their problems and had to invent other processes besides. But the thing is, do they actually tell you that when you're buying your ITIL software that you're going to need to invent other things too? I'm not so sure that that message gets clearly across.
No, but, you know, what product out there actually tells you, by the way, this is not a complete solution? You know, I think it's partly the customers to blame in the sense of we want to believe that there's one perfect solution. If we just adopt this stack of manuals, we don't need to know anything else. And I don't think that's ever true.
No, it's true.
Well, yeah. I don't think there's ever anything that's truly perfect. And I in the black and white world of, you know, technologists and IT, I think that there's a desire to have everything be exactly perfect and to put everything in its box. But in a service environment, it really just doesn't work that way, does it?
No, probably not. But I think organizations are looking for perfect solutions the way you say. ITIL is the best we've got at the moment. Or if it's not the best we've got, it's certainly the strongest marketed and probably one of the easiest to adopt. Because you buy a piece of help desk software these days, it almost comes in the box. The ITIL compatibility is already there. Support for incident management, change management, and so on.
And there's great things in ITIL, so I don't think we're trying to slam ITIL here, but I think it's just, as long as people realize that there are gaps in ITIL when it comes to managing the complete operations of an IT environment.
Yeah, the problem is, Greg, you don't know what you don't know, do you?
That's
you never do.
If you're coming to ITIL and you're looking for that as a solution, and it says use this, and this process, and you'll get there, you may not be that much better off. It won't help you, for example, to manage staff productivity. It won't necessarily help you to improve service levels. It'll just tell you how to do it in an organized way.
If you look at things in terms of people, process, and technology, those three things, it does handle process and technology pretty well. Very strong on process. The people side of things really requires some extra work.
There's a gray area there as where you draw the line at processes. There are, what, 8-9 key processes in ITIL, but there are 34 in COBIT.
Good point. For example,
I mean, I don't know if the figures are absolutely correct, but there's different ways of looking at the ITIL operational sphere, if you like, and deciding how best to do it. ITIL's one way of doing it. It's provided a form of solution. I think it could go a lot further.
So what are your top list of things? So for somebody who maybe is working with ITIL now or thinking about adopting ITIL as a standard, for their organization, what's the list of top things that you say they should also be thinking about that maybe ITIL doesn't quite cover?
I remember Aidan Laws, when he was the CEO of the IT Service Managers Forum here in the UK, and one of the UK's greatest exponents of ITIL, he said you can't call it a standard. That's why you can't be compliant with ITIL. What are the top things to look for? Okay, sure. It will give you good guidance, and the products will also give you good guidance as to how to manage incidents, how to be able to deal with an incoming query, log it properly, gather the information that you need in general terms, not specifically for your business, but in general terms, and move that to a place where it's going to get resolved and record the fact that you've passed it and record the fact that it gets resolved. Okay, that's there. That's great. But that won't necessarily tell you how many technicians you're going to need to deal with that type of incoming query. So you're going to have to measure your market, and there's nothing in ITIL about benchmarking. So you're going to have to measure how many types of inquiries on how many different topics and how much manpower you're going to need to throw at that. So that's something you will have to do besides ITIL.
Yeah, that really gets into figuring out if you're actually doing a good job versus doing the job.
I was actually thinking about more upfront, how big is the market? How big is the demand likely to be?
Right.
Yeah, that's the benchmarking. Of course, after that, when the work starts to get done and the results start to come in, then you're going to need to measure, I think what Greg says about customer satisfaction as well as service level productivity.
I struggle with customer satisfaction on this problem because I've never met anybody who is entirely satisfied with tech support of any kind.
Ah, I'm not surprised nobody tells them what to expect.
That's the perfection argument again.
Yeah, I guess, and it's exactly that. The customer doesn't know what to expect. What does a good experience look like?
Here's the thing. I'm dealing with a computer company at the moment, just bought a computer, and it's supposed to do Dolby 5.1 across an HDMI interface, and it doesn't. And the chap can't tell me how to fix it and thinks I should keep going to the motherboard manufacturer.
Right.
What's wrong there? Is that the support that they provide or my expectation of the type of support they should provide?
Well,
my satisfaction is low because of what I expect, not necessarily because of what they provide.
Yes, exactly right. And it's an interesting problem. And consider the fact that you're a very technical, a very savvy customer. You know so much more than average. So you're much more prepared to accept that diversity of potential answer, where a non-technical customer just has no idea and is always annoyed.
Yeah, and that's a difficult one to fix, because how do you tell them what to expect? Give them something to read beforehand, and will they do that? It's not going to be one of their priorities, is it?
No, they just want the problem fixed.
And it's probably SAS, the airline, used to call it moments of truth. Yeah, moments of truth. Whenever somebody contacts your IT support desk, one of the things you always check is what his expectation should be. So, for example, if somebody rings the help desk and reports a problem, one of the last things that we should tell him is when somebody's going to get back to him by. You deliver the when somebody's going to get back to you by, then they'll stop worrying and they don't have to keep calling you up.
Right.
And that makes your service look so much better straight away. As soon as they have to call you to find out when the problem is going to be solved, you appear to have lost control of the support.
Absolutely. And that's totally a perception thing. And nothing you said there actually involved helping the customer.
Nope.
It was actually about managing his expectation,
yep,
which raises his contentment level. So if we just shipped Valium to all of our customers, wouldn't our job be so much easier?
Wasn't there a piece in the paper yesterday about the fact that doesn't work anymore?
Something about drooling into the keyboard creates whole other problems, I think. So that what you're talking about now sort of touches on the concept of the service level agreement, whether it's a written SLA or if it's just a verbal SLA. I call on the phone, the service desk employee says, hey, we'll get back to you within an hour and a half. And then they've really established an agreement, haven't they?
Yeah, and it's true as well. That's the next thing. It has to be true. There's a trap here. Don't tell them that you're going to get back to them in an hour and a half and get back to them in 10 minutes, because the next time they'll expect you to get back in 10 minutes.
Right.
And you still haven't managed the expectation.
And all you've said is you're going to get back to them, not that the problem's going to be fixed.
Just that they're going to hear from you again. Right?
Well, exactly. And so then there's also this perception issue of, you know, where that guy gets into trouble was then he told his boss, well, 90 minutes from now, I'll be up and running again.
Yeah.
I think there's a tendency in IT, especially in a frustrated or busy IT department, to think that they own the problems, when really the problems are owned by the customers, and what the service desk owns is the solution, right? Or hopefully will own the solution.
Do I agree with that one? I'm not so sure. Okay, there are two sides to this. I witnessed a site recently where we had a big drop of communications where the wide area network went down. And that meant that the businesses couldn't function the way they were used to function because there was no IT. But then the business didn't try to function. It just waited for the computers to come back. And it could have, there were so many things it could have done. So yes, the problem of keeping the business running is owned by the business. But the problem of restoring IT to full productivity has to be owned by IT.
There really is a fundamental difference between a communication problem, I think, and a behavior problem. You know, if there's a method and a process for communicating, something, a system goes down and the people know who to call, for example, but they don't, that's really a behavior problem more than it is a communication problem at that point in time. And that's more of a management issue than it is a process or, you know, an agreement type of issue.
Well, again, we are getting a long way away from providing a technical solution there, because what we have to do is to make sure that they understand that the service is there to be used and how to
Right.
make use of it, how to invoke it, as it were. It can be a problem. How many times have you, you're a second line technician and you solve problems that come in over the phone? Yeah, that's great. And then one day you go to visit the users and two dozen problems that have never been reported suddenly come out of the woodwork. The while you're here effect.
Right.
Because exactly. because they didn't know that they could report them, or they weren't important enough to report, or they didn't realize that they were, yeah.
So there's a big emphasis on, again, on SLAs, I think, within IT. What's your general opinion about SLAs, and are they the end-all, be-all? I've seen SLAs work well in some organizations and really create a lot of consternation in others.
There are a number of different types of service level agreement, and that depends on where they come from as well. We could talk about this for weeks. The traditional service level agreement is a document that says the IT department will provide these services and they will be to this level and we will respond to this many queries at this speed. Does the customer actually take part in the service level agreement? There's the first question. Or is it an IT unilateral document? I have to say, more often than not, if IT appears to be doing okay, the customers don't need to get involved in the provision of the service. They only seem to want to get involved in the provision of the service if IT is deemed to be failing. So is the service level agreement truly a two-way document, or is it in fact a unilateral statement that's there for the customers to agree with or disagree with, depending on how well they think the services we provide suits what they need? Service level agreements don't necessarily tend to be they have to exist because we have to have something that describes what services we should manufacture, and there has to be a basis from which we can tell the customers what to expect. But we can't necessarily assume that just because it appears to be a two-way document that it will be used as such.
Right.
And I've seen an awful lot of organizations that have got by with a straightforward service level statement on our understanding of how you use IT, Mr. Customer, and on our understanding of how quickly you're going to need problems solved because of certain types of systems. This is what we're going to do for you. Now let's negotiate. You see what I mean? So we can make a unilateral statement because we understand how they use IT. Do we need a service level agreement to do that? We need something that describes our services, but we can't necessarily assume that it's going to be a two-way policed function.
Gentlemen, we have gone over, and I don't really want to stop, but we better. Maybe we'll just have to do another show.
I think that would be great. It's really been fun discussing and debating the ideas with you, Noel.
Noel, maybe some other resources we can point our listeners to?
Oh, yeah, there's so much. Well, I guess there's 100 or so press articles on my website, noelbruton.com. You really must go and visit Phil Vergus's help desk FAQ. Philip, PHILVERGHIS. Phil, put those two together, philvergus.com. He's got a great website. And from there, Phil links to lots of other things as well. Barbara Sagel's book, Running an Effective Help Desk, my own, How to Manage the IT Help. There's quite a lot out there, really. Helpdesk.com. I could go on for ages.
Fantastic. All right, guys, let's stop, and we'll revisit this topic again, I'm sure. Noel Bruton, it's been a real pleasure to be talking to you.
Thanks, Noel.
Thanks very much.
And we'll see you next week on Run As Radio.